Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Swinging from the Hips. We're up to episode number 16, and today we'll be looking at the Test match series between England and Pakistan, as well as the Irish heroics in the third ODI against the English. And to help me go through all that tonight is our regular Rohit, and joining us tonight once again is Tosif Sati, better known as Taz. Welcome, guys, and how are we doing?
All good, thank you.
It's good. Rohit, yeah. You're all good today? You sort of got all your work out the way?
Getting on top of the load.
That's good.
Turning a corner, so it's good.
All righty, mate. Well, we'll let you loose and let you go into This Week in History and tell us what's been happening in This Week in History.
Yeah. Oh, well, so looking at some birthdays here to start off with, we've got a couple of Kiwis there on that had birthdays, both celebrating on the same day. Being today, 6th of August. Firstly, Jesse Ryder, born in 1984, the old enigma there. And I think the other one who's got a little chip on his shoulder, born in 1969, I think he missed out on his 100th Test wicket, Mr. Simon Dool. Due to his injuries, wasn't it? I think he missed out, not being able to
click
that 100th year, something like that. And now, with the theme of tonight, with the Pakistani theme, we've got 2nd of August 1976, birth of Muhammad Zahid. Now, he became the first and only, so far, player for Pakistan to take 10 wickets on Test debut when he took 11 against New Zealand.
I was one of the ball pickers. That game.
Oh, so. Really?
It was at Rahul Pindy, so interesting.
Yeah, it was. Now, the interesting thing for this bloke, 4 tests later, he was out due to a back injury that he picked up in the second series against Sri Lanka, and he never played again. So, unfortunate for him and you know, for all his cricket viewers not being able to see his career.
Hey, Taz, you didn't throw the ball back and hit him in the back or anything, did you?
That guy was, like, really skinny, and he was just running really hard, so no wonder he got injured so early.
That's a shame, isn't it? Now, 1st of August 1924, this is Frank Worrell's birthday. He was the first black player to captain the West Indies on a regular basis. And obviously, you know, they play for the Frank Worrell Trophy between Australia and West Indies, but it's probably not well thought after these days, like it may have used to be in the back in the good old day for the West Indies. 5th of August 2019, just a little bit of more recent history in a way, but do you remember Sandpapergate? Yes. It was the return of Steve Smith after having his serving his time. He made 200s in that game that he came back in, and he's the 5th Australian player to make twin centuries in an Ashes test. So that's a pretty good comeback for Mr. Stephen Smith there.
He had a lot of time to practice.
Yeah, I think he played in the Canadian League and in the other league that he could, that wasn't sanctioned, I suppose, really. Was it? How did he get away with that, you know? Come on.
I think there was some, yeah, it was because it was banned was from Cricket Australia, so they can be flexible about it. So.
Oh. Technicalities. Technicalities.
Where it suits, eh? Now, a couple of other ones that I've got lined up here. Now, this is an interesting one. 3rd of August 2000. It's on the first day, Michael Atherton and Alex Stewart's 100th test together. Played at Old Trafford back then, Atherton's home ground. Now, Stewart took a catch behind the wicket. That was not the highlight, though. The following day, he became the fourth batsman to score 100 in his 100th test. So Colin Cowdery, Javed Miendad and Gordon Greenwich are the only other players. And he's the only one to do it on the Queen Mother's 100th birthday. So there you go. 100.
He's got 100 in his 100th test and on the Queen's 100th birthday.
Something
for more importantly, did the Queen Mother get a letter from the Queen?
Well, we never going to know. Now, a couple of other ones. This one was an interesting one for New Zealand history a little bit. So 2nd of August 2010 was the death of Eric Tindall. And he was just over 5 months short of what would have been his 100th birthday. Now, being cricketers, we're always talking about centuries and that, right? So, you know, you're always aiming to get to that 100. So he missed
out on 99.
Out of 99. But he was a dual rep. He played for cricket for New Zealand and rugby for New Zealand, apparently, and became the oldest Test cricketer on the 8th of November 2009, when he took over Francis McKinnon's record of 98 years of age. So just still falling short of that 100. And the last one I've got lined up for this evening is back on the 1st of August 1983, and this is in Headingley, where New Zealand won a test in England for the first time. Lance Cairns taking 10 wickets, which included his career best of 7 for 74, and Ewan Chatfield 6 to bowl England out for under 260 twice.
Nice effort there.
Yes.
Nice effort. Yes.
It was a good effort, winning our first test there in the Headingley, so well done.
It's funny when you see the footage there, we celebrated it, you know, like we always celebrate everything. Yay, we won.
Yeah.
Good old Kiwi celebration. We won.
None of this jumping up in the air business.
No. That's very ungentlemanlike, isn't it?
That's right. Exactly. So there we have it. In history, and there's a couple of birthdays.
Thanks for that, Rohit. And we'll move swiftly on into the week in news. And in the news, Sophie Devine will be hooking up with the Scorchers in the next edition of the WBBL, if it proceeds. So in saying that, sport is happening in Australia, apart from Melbourne or Victoria. So there's a good chance that it will. She will be partnering up with Beth Mooney in a pretty destructive opening partnership for the Western Australian side. Now, just for those that don't know, we know the power of Sophie Devine and what she's been doing in the women's game. Beth Mooney in the last women's BBL had an average over 70. So, that's actually going to be quite an interesting combination there to keep an eye on. Jeetan Patel, did have a role with England cricket to be their spin coach for the current series and a few other series to come, but that's come to abrupt end. The problem is his visa conditions. His visa conditions only allow him to play in England, not to coach in England. So therefore, he has now relinquished the role of coach, spin coach for England, and will only play T20 for Warwickshire. Now, that's the team he's been playing for over there. Now, this tournament, the T20, will be his last cricketing gig before he goes into retirement. So, and then maybe he's got his visa issues sorted out and then he can coach over there. But to my mind, obviously the English hold him in quite high regard. So it'd be nice to see him back on these shores helping out with the New Zealand cricket team, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Totally.
Now, Mitchell Santner will be joining Ross Taylor, Colin Munro, Tim Seifert, Glenn Phillips, Ish Sodhi, Corey Anderson, Scott Kugeline, and Nick Kelly, and heading over to the CPL in the Caribbean. The CPL will be starting on the 18th of August, so that's not too far away, but they left a few days ago to go over there. And if you're wondering who Nick Kelly is, as I was, he's actually an Australian-born cricket player, but is a Kiwi, playing for Northern Districts. And I have to admit, that name was very vague to me when I saw that name pop up.
I think he was in the same under-19s as East Sodhi. It's about maybe 8 years ago. And then he played a lot of games for ND, and then he moved down to Otago, where he played all formats, and that's where he probably excelled, and that's, I think, how he got picked. So,
he's back to ND.
Yeah, he's from, I think, Papakura.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is a Cairo, I think. So.
That's close to Hamilton. Now, the just moving on and slightly into the game that's just started. So commentators were left dumbfounded last night, our time, when the umpires pulled stumps early in the first test between England and Pakistan. But we'll get into that as we cover off the first test. And also something that we'll get into is the Ireland picked up their second only win over England with a comprehensive display in the third and final match of the ODI series. And that's where we go to first tonight. So as we've wrapped up our news, we'll go into that series. So just to go over quickly what's happened in the series. As was expected, England comfortably wrapped up the series within two matches, the first two matches. In the first ODI, Ireland struggled through to 172 off 44 overs, with England basically turning it into nearly a T20. They're basically chasing down the total in 27 overs. So chasing down the 172, 27 overs for the loss of only four wickets. The second saw Ireland improve a little bit. They managed to bat out their 50 overs this time and amass 212. This time England chased it down just as easily in 32 overs. But the fun and excitement came in the third ODI. This time England batted first and were bowled out with one ball to spare, with a daunting target of 328. So at the innings break, it looked like, for all intents purposes, that England were going to take a 3-0 series win. But somebody forgot to tell Paul Sterling and Andrew Bilburney the script, to show them the script. Sterling ended up scoring 142 and Bilburney 113. And Kevin O'Brien hit the single required to win the game with one ball still remaining. But get this. So Ireland ended up winning the game with the loss of only three wickets. So absolutely amazing effort there by Ireland in that last test. Did you guys catch any of that, highlights or the scorecards?
Yeah, forward a bit. I've been following Ireland for a bit now. So I think the Sterling has been playing county cricket for Middlesex, if I'm not wrong, and he's limited over specialists. So he probably comes across the English bowlers quite often. And he's an aggressive batsman. When he gets away with it, he gets away with it. And that's probably one of his days, you know. And I think he got run out in the end, so.
He did get run out in the end. I'll get onto the right scorecard here if I can, and I'll bring that up on screen. So basically, there we go. Paul Sterling, run out for 142.
40 odd, yeah.
And you're right. It's obviously got to be his day, because we go back to the first one dayer and the second one dayer, and he was bowled out cheaply, like the whole Irish team was, but he was bowled out fairly cheaply. So Paul Sterling, I mean, he's been around a while now, hasn't he?
Yeah, so I think he's been a good 12, 13 years. I mean, from what I can remember, I think he would have played for Ireland when he was in teen. He was still a teenager.
Right.
And I actually had a season in Ireland 2007, and everyone spoke high of him. And obviously Owen Morgan, and Owen ended up playing for England, and obviously we know who he is. And with Sterling, obviously, he started quite young for Ireland, and he's still only 29. So
he's still only 29, exactly. Just bringing up his details here, and he's if we look at his record, it's not too bad. I mean, when we look at Ireland, and obviously the teams that they get to play, and it's sort of for a guy that just goes out there and has a go, an average of 37 opening is not bad.
No.
So I'll just take it back there. Now, interesting, you mentioned another Irish name in that. And the fact, so there was three Irishmen that scored ODI centuries in that final game. And so one of them was for England, and that's Ian Morgan. So Bill Burney and Sterling, and then Ian Morgan scoring for a century there for England.
For England, yeah.
Yeah. So it must be hard. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, like, as you stated, it's just like all the names within Irish cricket, Ian Morgan, the big name, and he ends up going to play for England. It's a hard one to take for the Irish, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess, like, for professionals, obviously, I mean, Ireland now sort of, even now, like, their domestic cricket is not, like, you know, obviously, it's, you can't make a living out of it. So yep. What happens is, like, because they carry European passports, so they all end up playing county cricket. So because if they are eligible to play for England, that makes their county to hard, like, the chances are that the county is more likely to take them that way.
Yep.
So what happens is, like, they kind of just make a choice that they will play in England, and it's unfortunate, but I wish it was like soccer, where you just play for your country for internationals and then play wherever you want to, you know.
So yeah, that's right. I mean, it's interesting because you mentioned soccer. It's interesting because, like, in rugby, that sort of happened a little bit as well, where obviously within the UK format and including Ireland in that format, it's just like you can get guys playing club rugby in the UK, where there's more money available, etc. Yeah. Although that's changed a little bit with Ireland now, but especially with Wales and Scotland, you'll go to the UK where the clubs have the big money, and because you end up there starting from a junior, possibly you end up playing for England.
So I missed a little bit there, but did you say soccer is dependent on where you're born?
No.
What I was saying is, like, you know, like how soccer has developed more, like you don't play that many internationals. So when you do play, you do play for the country, you know, you started your career with, or, you know, I mean, technically where you were born, like, you know, I mean, you won't see many people switching, you know, sort of.
Rohit, go.
I was going to say that's the reason I brought that question up, because of what Simon said here. What happens if you've got parents from different countries, and how do you use your allegiance?
Yeah, look, I mean, as Simon just said, it's just like he does have an English mother, and from an early doors, sort of declared that he was going to play for England.
Yeah,
but it's like it's what, as you say, it's just like it's an easy one to sort of declare when you know that where you're going to get the game.
He scored 99 against England in ODI, so he played for Ireland before he played for England.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. So.
Oh wow. So then, okay. So if he played for Ireland in an ODI. Did he have the stand down period, the ICC stand down period?
No, so
then?
Because back then, I don't know if it's still the same. Like it doesn't apply to the if you're going to the minor country to a major test playing nation. So I remember there was a guy who played left armer who played for Netherlands, but he was an Aussie with Dutch passport. So he played for them, and then he ended up playing for Australia straight after that. But once you played for Australia, then you need 4 years. Stand up figure. So.
If you played for a tier one, for want of a term, going the other way, you've got your stand down periods, so to speak. But if you're playing up, then you don't necessarily have it. Or back in the day, anyway.
He was that Australian bowler, the long blonde hair dude, wasn't he? I can't think of his name. Starts with
Ian. It's pretty. Yeah. It was pretty sharp. He was sharp. I forgot his. He was a professional. I think he was part of another sport for Australia as well. So he took up, came back to cricket quite late.
It's
interesting because, as I said, the cricket eligibility rules are quite interesting. But I remember that one of the, as Simon says, you know, they're quite lax at times. But I also remember, like, talking about eligibility, and we're digressing here, but that's what we do, is Graham Hick. He had like about a 5-year stand down period.
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
He had to wait for 7, and he kind of missed out this golden period in that.
True, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he was Zimbabwe born, wasn't he?
Yeah. So Rhodesia or Zimbabwe, and then he got. I think he was available to play for England in 1991.
Yes.
But I think his peak was 1988 when he scored all like 405 in one innings, and he had.
Yeah, you know, his county games.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's interesting, though.
All righty. Well, so basically, as expected, England did wrap it up in those first two games, but a fantastic effort there. Ireland chasing down 328, which, you know, for any team would be a daunting prospect, isn't it? But I suppose with England batting first and getting the big score on the board, it gives you open license just to throw the bat.
That's a damn good chase, though, isn't it?
It is a good chase.
England did play all their bowlers, though, and but obviously, yeah, you know, they've got all their main bowlers who played the previous two games, so which means that they were not taking it lightly.
They did not take it lightly. No, he did. They didn't. And I mean, like, the thing is that, I mean, even they just keep going, because if you look, Ireland actually did lose a couple of early wickets, and so you would have had a little bit more pressure on. But that partnership between Stirling and Bill Burney basically built the platform, and then O'Brien comes in and with Tekta and just finishes it off.
That's, yeah. I mean, you're batting with no pressure, really, aren't you?
Well, it's no pressure right through, isn't it? Because you've got nothing to lose. I mean, you've lost the series. You're not expected to win, so you have a go.
Absolutely. And good on them for doing that, you know, because a lot of teams could have easily folded in 150 all out or something, right? Trying to give it the chase, but
chasing, you know, a big score like 328.
It would have been a really good game and to watch, even for the spectators at the ground. Over 600 runs in a day.
That's a lot. Spectators,
though. Yeah, the cardboard cutout spectators.
You know? Oh, you got the cameraman, you've got, you know, commentators, and they're having their shifts, so that, yeah.
Yes, I suppose, you know, that's the interesting thing, is that for us over here with going to sporting events, we've got crowds, so it's still takes a bit of getting used to seeing sports events overseas with no crowds there at all. It does look quite strange.
It does. Yeah.
Anyway, let's move along, and we'll move into the next series that England's move into now. Just to clarify, so England have got two squads. They've got an ODI squad and a Test match squad. So once the West Indies-England Test series was finished, that Test squad basically had a break and the ODI team came in and played Ireland. So now the Test squad that played West Indies is back again, and it's pretty much the same squad. I don't think they've changed anybody from England's perspective, but now they're playing Pakistan. And then first up is three test matches, the first starting at Old Trafford. So that got underway last night. And surprise, surprise, everybody out there is going to be surprised to hear that it was another truncated day with only 49 overs being bowled because of the fabulous English summer. Are we surprised?
Well, didn't they have a good summer a year or so back?
I don't know. Actually, I'll do time out there. I'm just going to turn to my left here and go, Paul, did England ever have a good summer?
I left the UK in 2005. I used to live in Singapore on the equator. I don't know.
Look, I mean, yeah, so it's a bit sad. I mean, and just coming back to actually, I mean, we will come back to the squads and we'll discuss the squads a bit, but it is disappointing that the we've got two spinners bowling and the umpires decided to pull stumps because of bad light. I mean, we want to see Test cricket, don't we? And the batsmen aren't saying anything. The game's carrying on. Do you let the game go? What are our thoughts here?
Who chooses to play for bad light? The umpires these days.
Yeah, there's a light meter umpires have, and I assume that for fast bowlers they need certain amount of light, and then for spinners they still. So it's not just the bowlers and bowlers and batsmen. It's also the fielders. So I'm not sure who makes the call. I mean, definitely umpire makes the call. But in past I've seen where, you know, the fielders have said we can't see the ball.
What I was reading today, I don't think they, in the past, the light got offered to the batsman. I think it's basically the umpires just make the call now.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. Because I think that's, I mean, like, normally it's a batting team that's disadvantaged by not being able to see the ball.
I just from what I was reading, and it wasn't clear, to be honest, but it made it sound like that it was a case of the umpires basically make the decision, and they don't really offer the light to the batsman.
Wow. Okay.
It comes down to, but is it? That's what it seemed like. It was right. That's just on a. It was on one of the. I think it was on the Crick Info page, but it was mainly the commentators just going off. There's this like, but they get to go back to the hotel early.
So moving on to overtime.
We get it. They want overtime exactly. Yeah, the slow bowling rates, and they carry on past the shut off time, and they get overtime. Look, so after just go over the scorecard quickly. After a slightly shaky start, it wasn't too bad. Is that Masood and Azam have gotten Pakistan back on track, and then before the other umpires decided to go. So basically, by the end of day's play, I'll get myself sorted here, and here we go. There's the scorecard. They were Pakistan in a pretty good position at 139 for two.
Yeah, I think good thing, I was watching it live, and good thing was that Pakistan didn't lose any wicket in first hour, maybe first 15 overs. Yep. And with someone like Anderson, obviously, he is quite lethal to the left-handers as well, because he brings it in, and Shan Masood in past had issues with it, like ball going across and coming back in. So I think surviving Anderson early on, because, he's not getting any younger. I think he's 37, 38. So,
39.
Yeah, 39. So not giving him a wicket early on, probably, he bowled well. Played and missed, guys played and missed a lot. But I think surviving the first hour was the key. And second and third spell, I guess someone like Anderson would still bowl decent pace, but that extra sort of edge he has with the new ball, I think that was taken away by both the batsmen who sort of saw it off. So I guess that's what mattered. 16th over. So yeah, so we probably sort of survived the first spell from Anderson and Broad. That probably helped.
No, that's absolutely. Yep, go right.
That's the beauty, eh? That's an opener's job done.
Yep, absolutely. Coming out there and sort of basically making sure that there's not early wickets. And just going back to the West Indies series, that's one thing that the West Indies struggled with big time. There was early wickets. Helps that fielding team get momentum up in their bowling lineup, doesn't it? And get their confidence up.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically nullify that.
Shan Masood has played 25 overs at his own out of 50, right?
Yep.
And that's a huge job for an opener, because now we've got another 30 overs before the new ball is due. So I think Stokes hasn't bowled, and he's probably one of the better bowlers with the old ball
for
England. So if either he's injured, I'm not sure. I didn't.
Does he still got that injury? Because he did have that injury in the last Test match.
Yeah. So he probably hasn't recovered from it. That's why probably England played four fast bowlers, and then a spinner. So I guess next 30 overs key for Pakistan if they can sort of accumulate as many runs, because second new ball Anderson comes again, you never know.
A bit of insight from my researcher in the background. Ben Stokes has been bowling in the nets, but I'm still thinking obviously they'll still carry him with kid gloves and just use him as required, I'm guessing.
You would want to risk him this early into it, right?
You don't want to risk him that early. Right, so basically, look, we'll go through the 11, since we've got the scorecard up there and we can see the names there. But one name I'm really keen to find out a bit more about and going to sort of like give you a hospital pass here, Taz, is that Nassim Shah, 17-year-old kid. We say kid because I'm nearly 50 in a few months. So I'm sort of saying kid. It's just like, tell us a bit about him. What's the raps on him?
So I think he's been in high performance system for the last 2 to 4 years. He's originally from Northern area in Pakistan, but he's been training at Abdul Qadir, the league spinner he had as an academy, his academy. So he's been training with them and then got into sort of Pakistan age group setups. So he's been in the system for a good 3 years. So it's not like he came from like in nowhere for Pakistan. But he's sort of like someone everyone spoke really high of, because he's not your sort of traditional Pakistani bowler. Like he hits the deck hard. So he's not like a swing out and out swing bowler. Like say someone like Wakar, they were quick, but they also relied on swing. So this guy actually hits the deck hard and gets very good carry. On a good day, obviously, especially with the Dukes ball, because I haven't seen him bowl in England. So it would be good to see how he goes. Because I know in Australia, he didn't take that many wickets, but he bowled some really good balls. And Dukes naturally swings a little bit more and slightly smaller, from my understanding. So let's see how it goes there. But yeah, probably one of the brightest prospects Pakistan has since Mohammad Amir.
Right, that's big raps there. So, you're right. I mean, like my understanding, going back to him in Australia, he didn't get a lot of wickets, but by all accounts, the batsmen all got hurried up by what he was able to generate out there. So it's I mean, I always love seeing new players come along. I mean, like, seeing Jofra Archer's development, and we've been hearing so much about him. I'm really looking forward to seeing Nazim Shah in terms of his progress and how he goes. They're going to have to be careful with him, eh? 17 years old, you don't want to work him into the ground, do you? I mean, you don't want to – it's a young body. It's still developing. He needs to be looked after.
Yeah, I think from what I hear is, like, obviously he's already had issues. So first year, like when he started, I think under 16s, under 15s, he was playing, he had back injuries. So they've kind of have been working together with a few sort of senior coaches and everything. And Pakistan is they probably know that, like, you don't want to lose this one night through injuries. So in past we have, like, the guy we're talking about, Mohammad Zahid, he was amazing, but again, like, wasn't looked after that well. So I think with Nazim, they are already looking after him, and they didn't play him back-to-back test matches from what I remember. So,
yep. It's a hard one though, isn't it? It's just like, all of a sudden, if he has some success, really tempting not to carry on playing him in the next test, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a hard call.
It's a hard call for the player as well to be rested for the next test when he's just had a really good performance in the first one, isn't it? You really want to be carrying
Is they've been sort of managing a workload at how many overs he's bowling and sort of how his body is, and they're just taking game by game from what I know.
But just sort of going into that, Rohit was saying, it's just like, as a player, even though he's so young and he won't see it, he's got lots of time in the game, but all he sees is the next game. And you're sort of thinking, if I'm not there, somebody's taking my chance and I might not get to play again, even though he's only 17 and he's got 20-odd years of cricket ahead of him, if he looks after himself.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, now I think things have changed because so many franchise, like, T20 sort of things happening around the world and everything. So these guys probably know that what they're worth and how to sort of look after their body. I think Amir sort of retired from red ball cricket just to look after, you know, his white ball career. Assume that, like, he will, he knows that, you know, he needs to take a break in between. So.
We'll see how that goes. Now, look, I mean, I'm going to go on to this next player. In the fact is, it's sort of surprising. It's surprising for me only in the fact that that Sarfraz Ahmed is wicketkeeper, been around for so long, or feels like it's been around for so long, performed. But they've gone with Mohammad Rizwan in the test team. I'm sort of thinking, batting wise, Rizwan's a much better player.
Yeah, and I think that they're probably slowly trying to move on from Sarfraz as well, because he's been around for a while and he's not the captain anymore, and that probably doesn't help when you've got ex-captain. You know what Pakistan will probably miss him is for the way he was talking to the bowlers and giving them directions during a test match. Babar is completely opposite. Like, he's not the same as, you know, Sarfraz, and Sarfraz being the keeper, he probably got most out of the spinners because he could communicate with them, you know, and he could use the bowlers like the way he could see from behind the stumps. I think that's what probably Pakistan will miss the most. Keeping wise, he probably was downhill for the last couple of years, if I'm not wrong. And batting, he's a fighter. Like, he's probably your number seven, but Rizwan can bat at number six. So Rizwan is a more orthodox batsman. And what I've heard from the guys in Pakistan is he's probably the fittest guy around. So I guess, like, they're probably moving on to slightly younger and sort of more sort of agile player. And Sarfraz might still play T20s.
he's a battler there, yeah, Safaz. I quite enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, and he was, it's just like, I think he's got to a stage where he was a captain and he's, I think, 33. Yeah. So they're probably trying to get the next guy ready.
The longevity of his one day or T20 career.
Yeah.
Speaking of captains, so obviously Azhar Ali, now the captain of the Pakistan team, would have been disappointed at getting the old egg, last night.
Yeah, I mean, he's again a hard worker. Like he actually started his career as a leg spin bowler and genuine number 10, number 11, and worked all the way up. So he's hard worker. I guess like Pakistan is probably reliant on him, Asif Shafiq and Babar Azam, those three. And because they're only playing with five genuine batsmen, kind of I was hoping that Azhar stays a bit longer. But I think that what we got bonus out of Shan Masood, that kind of covered Azhar up a little bit.
Sure.
And but Azhar Ali, definitely a fighter. And for Pakistan, at least for next 3-4 years, you want Babar Azam, Azhar Ali and Asif Shafiq to bat.
And so, since we've mentioned Babar Azam a few times, and he sort of seen him as basically the key, the glue in the batting lineup.
I think he's still sort of, he's obviously in last 10 games, I think he's scored 1,000 runs, averaging 67. He scored 5 test centers, all 5 test centers are in last 10 games. So he's played 26 games in 500s, and all those 500s are in last 10 games. So he's kind of in-form batsman and pretty good on both front foot and back foot. He scored comfortable. He was comfortable in Australia playing against like quick bowlers, back foot, pole cut. And he looks all right in England as well. So he's probably got a solid technique and really light on his feet that he can play moving Duke's ball as well as a hard, bouncy sort of, Kookaburra.
And this is like, I mean, we sort of talked pre-show. I mean, like, probably not getting the sort of coverage that the more sort of famous, like a Virat Kohli or whatever, who, if he's getting these sorts of numbers, particularly in the last year, it would have gotten. So he really is flying under the radar.
I guess, yeah. But on the other hand, like, he's only played 26 test matches and 74 ODIs, as you can see. So, I mean, with Kohli, like, he's Kohli is, I think, 31, 32. So he's about 6 years older and he's done it over and over again. So Kohli, especially in test cricket, Kohli probably hasn't done as well as he's done in one day cricket. But Kohli's one day stats are amazing. But he's played a lot more cricket. So I think let's wait for another maybe 2 years. If Babar Azam can do it for another couple of years, then I think, yeah, we can talk about the comparison.
Very diplomatic of you.
Very, very. I thought he should be recognized. A bit more recognition should go as well, I felt.
No, it is. I think you're right in a way that he's sort of flown under the radar. But in all three ODI, T20 and test ranking, he's in top 10. So yeah, I think that's where people see that, so with the current form, he's definitely in the top. I would say he's in top 4 batsmen across all formats, whether it's test cricket, ODI or like T20s. But when we come to Kohli's won so many games chasing, probably the consistency. As you said, Babar's only scored 5 test hundreds and all of them were in last 10 games. So first 16 test matches, he didn't score 100.
So he's just finding his feet basically at that test level, isn't he?
Young, I think he's too young to sort of be compared to someone like Kohli. But on form right now, he's up there.
And I'm just going to go back to your comments around Azhar Ali. Actually, I'll get the right comment up there. And it's just like, as Ali, Pakistan's version of Mark Richardson, because Mark Richardson started off as an off-spin bowler and ended up being the opening batter for New Zealand.
Yeah. But I mean, I think Azhar Ali is better.
Now we're going to set something off here.
we'll move on to the English team. And we'll be seeing rotation for their bowlers happening. And I think if, off the top of my head, I could be wrong, and I'm happy to be corrected, they've basically gone with the same bowling lineup as the last test against the West Indies, with Anderson, Broad, Wokes, and Archer as their four main bowlers, pace attack. So and Wood's missing out.
Yeah, I guess like I think it's Archer or Wood. You can't have both, you know, because it's like they try to, like, obviously they're quick, or they want to push the batsman back. And I guess you can't play both. I mean, you can in a way, but how I see they're trying to sort of, because Wokes is a very good batsman too. He's called a Test 100, yes. And he's like, you know, so he's your number eight. So if you play both Archer and Woods and then Anderson, so you kind of have a longer tail as well. So I'm not sure if that's got to do with it, but.
Yep. And I sort of think it's just like, you know, they've actually been going well. Interestingly enough, that, you know, we go back to the first test against the West Indies, and they started without Broad. I was going to say dropped, but he was not dropped. He was started without Broad. Broad and Anderson both came out at various times saying how they like playing together, and they actually sort of work much better together. And almost like since they've said that, they've been selected in every game together.
So
it's like, and when you've watched it, it's just like, Broad's been on fire. I mean, he hasn't picked up any wickets, obviously with a truncated game, but they'll be looking for Broad. He seems to be in form. He'll be looking to sort of have some good success against Pakistan as well.
Yeah, I guess like he was top wicket taker in the last series despite missing the first game. So. He obviously came back very strong after being dropped or rested, or, you know, whatever they say.
Yep.
But I guess like this is a slightly slower deck as well. So I don't know if they needed four fast bowlers and Stokes, because someone like Stokes would probably do bowl better on these kind of pitches, I would say. Four fast bowlers on this track. I mean, it hasn't worked so far for them, but you never know.
Well, I was going to say, so we've got to what's the spinning options? Obviously, Pakistan have got a few spinning options. Realistically speaking, I know Joe Root bowls spin, but Dom Bess is their spin bowler. Are we expecting this? We didn't see a lot of spin in this pitch in the West Indies series. Are we expecting anything different from the Pakistan bowlers or the England bowling options?
This being a little bit dry, and I think the temperature is in mid-20s, at least next 3 days, turning 30 in Manchester, and no rain. So I guess like Pakistan has probably played for the fifth day that they've batted first, looking at the pitch that is slightly drier than traditional English pitches. And in August, generally, like August, it does turn. Not necessarily at Manchester, but in general. So I guess with England just playing one spinner, finger spinner, who is only played 8 test matches. So so I guess like they've gone with, and he can bat too. So I assume that they're playing him with someone who can bat it. Because if Wokes is batting at 7, Bess would be batting at 8. So they kind of, they've probably gone with without a, like a out and out genuine spinner. Well, he is a genuine spinner, but like someone who bat even lower. So I assume that that's probably part of it, that he's picked for as a bowler who can bat at number 8.
So he's a bowling all-rounder?
Would you put him in that category? Yeah, because his bowling in general, like he hasn't done exceptionally well. Yeah, but he's only played 8 test matches. So Moeen Ali was the other option, or the leggy, but they've gone for the guy they've been with like start of the season, so I guess they just want to build it up for him.
Is he quite young for a international spin bowler?
It really depends, because like it's I think he's 22 or 23.
Yeah,
he's 23. Yeah. So
you're still learning your craft, aren't you?
Yeah, but I mean, like someone like Harbhajan Singh from India was at his prime at 21, you know. So
he was bowling since he was 2.
so it really depends upon like how sort of your age as a bowler. I guess like he's you know, he's he's not a bad, what I've seen is not a bad bowler. It's just like,
right,
for a finger spinner, he does miss the length a lot.
Yeah.
And for wrist spinner, you can see that, you know, leg spinners probably, you know, missed the length. But for finger spinner, from what I've seen, he has missed his length a bit. So
you do expect the finger spinner to be more consistent.
And that's where it's coming from. He's still quite young in the scheme of being an off-break bowler, and he is still learning his craft in a way, right?
Yeah.
And England's obviously put a lot of investment into him to put him in that international level.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is sort of a track where a spinner can win you a game in England because it's slightly less moisture. So these sort of tracks, you want your spinner to be able to take five for. I mean, I might be wrong. He might be able to take a five for, you know. But I'm trying to say it's like you almost like from one end, your spinner is bowling on day four or day five to win you a game. Yeah. On a track like these, which probably would be slower and probably a lot drier and maybe get more purchase towards the end of the like day four and all day five.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely. Just going back to the, you know, the conditions and there's a chance that, as we said, the next few days are actually looking quite warm. I mean, tonight, when they start playing, they're looking for a high of 29. So there's a chance that, unlike in the West Indies series, where there was always grey skies, a bit of moisture around, that with 3-4 days of sunshine, that we might actually see some drying out of the Old Trafford track.
Yeah, and from the pitch report, they said it was a lot drier as well,
right,
from day one, and that's probably why Pakistan batted first. I don't know.
Yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Someone I'm going to mention in terms of Pakistan is Yasir Shah, and it's just like you just love seeing him play the game because he's always got a smile on his face. It's just like, I mean, it's the success to go with the smile, but it's just great to see someone that enjoys the game, and even when things aren't necessarily going his way, he's still got a smile on his face.
Yes, yeah. And one more thing about Pakistan's batting is probably from my, I've been following cricket for a wee while, this is probably the weakest Pakistan batting lineup I have seen in England.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like you've got three guys, basically you've got Azhar Ali, Babar Azam, and Asif Shafiq. And Babar is still like obviously a second tour to England, so he's still relatively young, but like you've got like three guys who you can probably who've been consistently playing for Pakistan. So other guys are in and out. So keeping that in mind, and Pakistan only played five batsmen in this game. So I mean, it will be interesting how they play in the second innings.
So do you think that out of the bowlers, who are there that can actually hold a bat, that can handle the bat?
Pakistan's got a really long tail. Because I mean, Shadab Khan is—he's actually in longer format. He's probably as good of a batsman as he is as bowler, and he's developed a lot in last 12 months. Shorter formats, I think he's one of the top scorers in Pakistan Super League this year.
Right.
So he's developing. So he probably is your number seven, but then your number eight is Yasir Shah. So he scored a Test 100 last year in Australia, but he's—I think he's averaging around 12, 13. So he's still your number nine, number 10 at best. So he's batting at eight, and then last three are like, you know, you've got like not Chris Martins, but like, you know, all three guys are like, they've got single figure first class averages, you know. So Pakistan is playing with a long so what I think what they've banked is their bowling. So they've banked on their bowling. If somehow they get 315 first innings, I think they're in it.
They're in the game, aren't they?
Yeah,
look, we're seeing that a lot, aren't we? I mean, in Test match cricket, you don't have to get 500, do you? 350 and good pressure with your bowling lineup is enough.
Yeah, especially when you're playing with five bowlers and all five bowlers are different, you know. So we've got Nasim Shah, who hits the deck hard, bowls well to left-handers. Then we've got Mohammad Abbas. He's like Mohammad Asif, just, you know, sort of medium pacer, but swings it both ways and pitches it up. And then you've got Shaheen Shah, the tall guy. I think he's 6'4", 6'5". And again, he's completely different, three different bowlers. And then you've got two spinners. So Shadab Khan is more one day like bowler, and Yasir Shah is your like, you know, orthodox, you know, test spinner. So I think that's why they batted first so that they can bowl last. So hopefully they score enough runs in first innings that they will be bowling last on day five.
Day five. Yeah. Yep.
Abbas is the most experienced out of the lot, isn't he? from the bowling
he
unit.
He certainly is, and he probably hasn't played a lot. He's played 18 or 20. I don't know how many test matches he's played, but he hasn't played a lot either. But he's definitely the experienced one because he's been playing county cricket for Leicester, so yes. He is more familiar with English conditions as well.
Yeah, how do you expect him to go?
I think he's last maybe 5-6 test matches. He hasn't been bowling as well as he did in like his first 10 test matches.
Yeah.
If England goes after him early, because he's sort of a bowler who, if you let him bowl, then he will take five for not many runs, you know? So yeah. But he doesn't have the pace. So it depends how England sees him. But with a few new names in England, Pope, Byrne, and Dom Sibley, I think he will challenge them.
Yeah, I've seen him bowl before outside of England in other test match series, and I've often thought, you know, he doesn't have the pace, but he was fairly accurate in what he was doing and picking up the wickets, you know, and he was a successful bowler in a couple of series that I did watch, and I think one was back at home in UAE at the time.
So
it'd be interesting to see how he progresses through the series.
Because he did well with Kookaburra, and I mean he should do better with Dukes, you know. So English conditions, like someone like him, probably he would have done better if the series was in like, you know, say May or June early on in the English summer where it does a little bit more. But he still gets something out on a flat deck, like, you know, in UAE he was taking wickets against New Zealand and Australia. But he does pitch it up, so that's probably the positive.
Yeah.
It's, now, just coming back to England, I'm sort of thinking that the English batting lineup is under a little bit of pressure because a lot of their runs that have been off the back of Ben Stokes. I think in that last innings against West Indies, Ben Stokes didn't bat and they got some good runs. But basically, West Indies mentally were on the plane home. And I thought that would, it's just that the runs came easy. But realistically speaking, there's a lot of pressure on that English batting lineup, even though they bat deep.
Yeah, I guess like Joe Root has to bat long, because if he doesn't, the three young players who haven't played, like I think they all three of them have played like 10 or like less than 10 test matches.
Yep.
Because Pakistan's got so much variation in their bowling, you can't hide. You know, you basically have to be good against spin. You have to be good against quick bowlers, like genuine fast bowlers, and you have to be good against swing bowlers. So it's kind of like the variation in Pakistan attack will expose any technical deficiencies if there is with new English batsmen.
Yep, it will do. And it's going to be – I think they'll get more of a test than they did against the West Indian bowlers. I think the pressure is going to be on more consistently. I mean, we do know the temperament of the Pakistan players can obviously shift a bit, but as long as they remain focused, then the pressure is going to remain on from that bowling lineup through to that English batting lineup.
Yeah, if they've got runs on board, that's where like Pakistan in the past have struggled, that they never really scored enough runs that their bowlers can challenge, you know. So if they put like 350 on board in first innings, I think Pakistan is in it, because England got three sort of inexperienced batsmen in top five, and that's where Pakistan should be looking to exploit it.
Absolutely. I'm just sort of basically cats. Sorry, Paul's just coming in. One moment, please, callers.
So with Asics, they're inexperienced bowlers. Sorry, batsmen. Will they have enough game tape to know where how to get those batsmen out?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So basically, is this like with the English batters being inexperienced, haven't seen them? Are they going to have the sort of knowledge on what their attackers, what they're going to bowl at these new batters in the English side to know how to exploit that inexperience?
Yeah, Pakistan is quite lucky because Waqar Yunus is sitting in the dressing room, you know. So I guess that really helps, you know, because someone like Waqar and Misbah Haq and Yunus Khan, so they've got that sort of think tank behind it. And I'm sure they will come up with they will figure out the batsmen. And if anyone has any limitations, they will try to exploit it. And having Waqar Yunus obviously is great for these young fast bowlers.
And I suppose that's the benefit. I mean, well, you know, the downside for the English players is that, I mean, there's probably more footage around of the up and coming English batters than there would be of or players than there would be of up and coming Pakistani players. So there's more video footage to actually analyze and review.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look. Just sort of like, so we're sort of I'm just going to bring up the two the match day the test match 11s. Outside of these 11, especially with the Pakistan squad in particular, obviously, who do you see as someone that you're looking forward to possibly getting some game time in the matches to come?
So I think Pakistan, obviously, they've gone with five batsmen instead of six. So yep. If they do go for six batsmen, at number six, probably Fawad Alam. He's averaging 55 in, I think, first class cricket, and he hasn't been getting a go. English conditions are obviously different, but I would say if he gets a go, that would be fair. And openers, I think they're waiting for one of the openers to fail. If Imamul Haq gets in, that's the only way he'll get in. Obviously, he's an opener.
Yep.
I personally quite like Sohail Khan. I mean, he's taken a five for in the warm-up game. He's kind of like he's late 30s, mid 30s, but he's hard worker, and he will swing the old ball. Like he's the guy who can bowl, like, you know, between 50 and 80 overs, and yep. He would, you know, so he's sort of like he's your reverse swing bowler. So they've left him out, and he might get a go in next game. And there's a Kashif Bhatti, I think he's a spinner. And again, like, you know, it depends. Pakistan would, I don't think they will play two spinners. So,
but I mean, like, I suppose, yeah, in terms of not playing two spinners, you mentioned, like, going back to, I'll make sure I get that, Azhar Ali, and who's actually was a spin bowler, is now done the hard work and become a top level batter. I'm guessing he's still a bowling option.
Well, the thing is, he's a leg spinner, so they've got two leg spinners already.
Two leg spinners.
So I guess, like, it depends how Yasir Shah and Shadab go, but it would be hard to fit in a finger spinner with those two playing, you know, sort of. But depending on the tracks as well, because this was meant to be a dry, like, after first day, it was meant to be dry next 4 days and slightly dry wicket. So I think that's why they've gone for two leggies.
And so I suppose really within the English setup, there isn't a lot of room apart for – they've got a pretty settled 11 now, haven't they? They'll swap in Mark Wood within their bowling ranks. But realistically speaking, Sam Curran's probably not going to get a go unless Chris Wokes gets injured. That's probably a direct replacement there.
Yep.
So realistically speaking, the 11 that we're seeing on, barring Mark Wood – is what we're probably going to see all the way through the series.
Yeah, but I mean, cricket is a funny game. Like, you know, like Dom Sibley and Pop, if they have three back-to-back failures, you never know. Like, you know, it's a funny sport in that way that, you know, you're in form and after two test matches, you're out of form, you know? So, but I think they will probably invest in young players, and they've given another guy a long chance, I forgot his name now, who did play first test against West Indies, but he scored a lot of starts. He got a lot of starts, but never really got...
Dinley. Dinley.
So gave him a good run. So I assume they will give these guys a good run as well. But as I said, like, they probably... I don't know if they've played quality spin bowling, you know, in English county cricket or test cricket so far, and this will be a challenge for them.
Yeah, Raheem. With all due respect, Raheem Cornwall wasn't really a sort of like a seasoned spin bowler that was going to challenge the batters from the West Indies, was he?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously relatively new. He's got good first class stats, but if you remember, like, Guptill struggled in spin, right? And then whoever we played against, they just brought the spinner as soon as he was in. You know? So I guess, like, that's where sort of with these players, we don't know how well they will play spin, and that is where they will be challenged.
So we're coming up to, we're nearly out of time, but we're coming up to day two. What are we looking for on day two of this test match? What's England looking to do? What's Pakistan looking to do?
Well, I mean, I guess like England want to sort of dry up the runs in the next 30 overs. Because once they get the second new ball, you know, Anderson cannot falter twice. Not falter, but he will take wickets with the second new ball, right?
Yep.
So if Pakistan in the next 30 overs scores another 100 runs, they will be around, what, 240? And mm-hmm. then Anderson comes in, Pakistan's got a long tail. So from Pakistan perspective, I think before the second new ball is due, they should score as many as they can, you know?
That's it, basically. So for Pakistan, they're looking to get out there and consolidate their position and make sure that the next few wickets score the bulk of the runs. Because, as you say, their lower order isn't going to...
Yeah, Asif Shafiq is the key, like, and these two guys batting now. So because Babar Azam can play the new ball, so hopefully he sticks around for another 30 overs. I mean, I hope he does. I'm a Pakistan supporter. So because the second new ball will be a bigger challenge. As I said, Anderson, a great new ball bowler, and you know, he will take wickets with the second new ball.
Be leg weary a bit.
What's that? Sorry, Ryan?
He'll be leg weary a bit, getting older.
Yeah.
Well, that's I suppose it's an interesting thing here. It's just like, okay, yeah. So, you know, they have now bowled, like the test match has effectively gone bang, bang, bang. They've had a week off from the West Indies series into this test match. Are the English bowlers going to, if Pakistan can keep them out there, eventually that's going to take a toll on the English bowlers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the adrenaline as well. Like, if Anderson takes one wicket, honestly, he can bowl all day. Like, if he keeps on taking wickets, he'll bowl all day, you know?
Yep.
But you're right, like, playing back-to-back test matches and, like, you know, obviously it does take a toll on your body and, you know, they're not getting any younger. But I would be surprised if they don't rest Jofra Archer after this test match.
Yep.
You know, sort of someone who he bowls a lot of short balls as well. So yes. They probably would try to protect him. And with Anderson, like, you probably, Anderson is a bowler you don't want to risk, you know, unless he's injured, you know.
Yeah.
Because he's an old horse and, you know.
Would you call Archer more of an, like, I mean, as opposed to a rhythmic bowler, he's more of an effort bowler? And so he takes more toll on his body?
He's so natural, though. Like, he bowls effortless. Like, you know, the way he runs in and he bowls effortless. But the thing is, he has in last 6 months or 12 months, he had injuries on and off.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want a stress fracture, or you don't want something major to happen. So yep. I guess they probably would give him a break, because he does bowl, like, he banged it, like, he back off a length a lot as well with very minimal effort, but still, it's still sort of could take a toll on his body.
And they wouldn't want him breaking down before the Ashes.
No.
Hey, as it would be fair to say with the Pakistani batting, I mean, we saw it in the West Indies where players did not get on and score the big one.
Yeah.
And this is probably where Pakistan would need to step up here, and one of these guys that are in is going to have to score a big one.
Yes, convert.
Would you say?
Yeah.
To get to that 300 plus mark, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, because these two guys are in, so you rather them bat longer, as the longer the, you know, the better. Babar Azam, as I said, like, he scored 500s in last 10 games, and he's in good form. He's looking good. So I guess, like, these two, this partnership in particular, if Pakistan doesn't lose a wicket in first hour, that would be great for them, you know?
Yeah.
So effectively, when we talk about, you know, what are we looking for day one, Pakistan are looking to make sure they don't lose a wicket in that first hour, just like they did on the first day.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'll take this opportunity, since Google sort of has decided to chuck up an ad in there and say Jim's Fire Safety. So for all your fire safety requirements, make sure you ring Jim's Fire Safety and for your test and tag requirements. And the reason I'm going there, because I'm 99% about to join them. So yeah, look, for all your test and tag, electrical test and tag requirements and fire safety requirements, ring Jim for all that work. hey, look, we'll wrap it up there. We've done our, we've gone the old hour, and it's sort of like we could go on forever as we always do. But thanks, Tez, for coming on today, because it's been, I mean, with your insight into Pakistan cricket, it's been fantastic. And I'll put the on air invite out there. How about, would you like to come back next week so we can review the first test?
Let's see how it goes. No, it should be all right. Yeah, obviously my family is back from overseas, so it depends. Like,
oh, we'll see how that kids.
Give you a break.
Oh, so you're home alone at the moment?
No, they're here. So they were overseas when we had the last few episodes, but like this time they're here, so I'm keeping them right for an hour.
You got to juggle it. I totally understand. Mm-hmm. Again, thanks for coming on the show. Really awesome to get your insights into the Pakistan team in particular, and it adds so much to the show. Rohit, thanks again, and we'll see you again next week. And so to everybody out there, once again, thanks for tuning in and listening to Swinging from the Hip. Remember, all right, here on New Zealand Sport Radio, you're getting so much more. You've got basically shows every week. Every morning we've got the sport morning sports briefing. That's at 7 o'clock to get all your sports news for the day. And then basically from Monday back around through the Sunday, Monday we've got the Driving Mall show, get your rugby information out there. Wednesday nights we've got the standoff for all your league fans. And then obviously the great show on New Zealand Sport Radio, Swinging from the Hip. That's on Thursdays at 8 p.m. right here. And Friday night, reviewing of the Super Rugby coming up on the weekend. And Sunday night, I'm usually there. So come and join me for a review of what's gone down in Super Rugby. But absolutely, get into New Zealand Sport Radio. See the shows that we've got on. Make sure you download those podcasts. Even if you've watched the shows, download the podcast as well. We've got to get those podcast downloads up. And thank you for watching. And we'll see you again here on Swinging from the Hip at 8 p.m. right here on New Zealand Sport Radio next Thursday. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.